director of Food and Water Watch and coordinates the organization's food policy team. Patty has a bachelor's degree in environmental science from,
Lehigh University,
and a master's degree in environmental policy from the University of Michigan. Before joining Food and Water Watch, Patty was the deputy director of Energy and Environment Program at Public Citizen and a researcher at the Center for Health, Environment, and Justice.
Good morning. So my name is Patty Lavera, and I work with an organization called Food and Water Watch. We are not fans of the World Trade Organization and lots of really the, most of the trade deals that we've seen, and public health underlies the reason really for that concern. We've realized over the years every issue we work on, we are fighting usually for domestic policy changes, and we're very concerned that the trend in trade deals, whether they're deals between two countries or larger trade deals, you know, multilateral trade deals, are containing these mechanisms that let foreign investors attack domestic regulations that they don't like. And it's amazing how much it does cut across our issues, whether it's our food program or our water program. It's things ranging from whether municipalities and local governments will maintain control of their public water systems and they will stay as public water systems, to, you know, land use regulations, things like energy exploration and extraction, how you regulate that. Increasingly, we're worried about agriculture and how that is zoned, and then really basic consumer protections like food labeling and food safety standards. We can see all of them in potentially the crosshairs of these dispute settlements, and that's really driving a lot of our concern in addition to the traditional things you worry about with trade deals in terms of imports and tariffs and things like that. So I don't have anything to disclose. Obviously, the trade deal of the moment that we're all talking about is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So more folks have heard about this recently because the text is done, although we don't get to see it yet. And this is just a refresher of who we're talking about and where we're talking about. So it's an enormous part of the world's economy. Some folks say it's 40%. There are other countries expressing interest that aren't even on this list. So Indonesia, I think last week, said they think they're thinking about joining in. They would be joining into a deal that's already been written. And the big question, the eternal question, is always, will China join after this deal is done? So the text is done. It has been negotiated. We haven't seen it yet. So this is the big question, what exactly is in there? One thing that we're fairly confident will be in there is some form of these investor state dispute settlement mechanisms, and I think several of us here today are going to talk about that. So we have to, when I'm talking to folks who aren't, you know, motivated enough to come to an 8:30 session on trade issues, when I'm talking to the general public, we have to explain what that is, because it sounds made up. And it sounds made up especially to Americans who are used to our system of laws with U.S. laws end up in U.S. court, et cetera. And we have to really explain this because it doesn't sound right. And so what this boils down to is that, you know, an investor, a foreign firm, can challenge a domestic standard, and that these are investors challenging a state. Previous generations, the WTO, the World Trade Organization, kind of first generation trade deals, it was state-to-state challenges. We've still seen damage from that. A personal issue I spent far too much of my career fighting on is the issue of labeling for country of origin of foods, and we are in the middle of a battle right now at the WTO where corporate interests who don't like that standard have convinced other countries to attack a U.S. law requiring these labels. So damage gets done in state-to-state challenges, but investor-to-state challenges is just a whole other ballgame. So originally, this concept is supposed to encourage investment, right? It's supposed to reassure investors they're not going to be the subject of nationalization or something like that that would hurt their ability to make money. But it's morphed into a venue for investors to go after regulations that they think impede their business plans. And that these unlike the WTO and a state-to-state system, where if you lose the case, the cost that you would pay is through tariffs. In this case, the countries that lose the case, or the state that loses the case, has to pay monetary damages. So we've seen these investor state provisions in different styles of agreements, so bilateral treaties, that's two countries having a deal with each other, and we've also now seen them in trade pacts where we've got multiple countries doing it together. Most of them are in bilateral deals because there are a lot of bilateral deals. There's a lot of deals between two countries. NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, was the first U.S. deal that had these investor-to-state provisions, and we have seen cases used under NAFTA. Worldwide, there's about 3,500 trade deals with some kind of investor-to-state component to them. And if we're looking at a TPP deal getting done and applying to the U.S., we've estimated there's about 16,000 TPP country-based firms doing business in the U.S. So that's kind of the universe of folks who might say this standard, this regulation is something I'm going to challenge as a foreign investor. So this is what we've charted in digging through various trade documents to figure out what's the growth and the occurrence of these investor state cases from the late 80s until last year. And so investors, they've won about two-fifths of the cases, and they have been awarded $3.6 billion in damages, and that $3.6 billion in damages was through bilateral deals involving the United States. And so we've seen the number of cases going up and the total amount involved going up at the same time, and that's not super surprising given that we're seeing this concept and this tool in more and more deals. The most common, if we were to categorize the types of rules being challenged, the most common were environmental standards, and the most common under that is energy uses, mining, oil, restricting applications or permissions to drill a certain place or do some kind of project like that. Water pollution is high on that list as well in terms of discharges, permitting for an operation being able to discharge. And then there's other things sprinkled in there too, the control of water, whether a municipality is going to let a private water company run their water system or end that deal once the deal has started. Prescription drug patents are in the mix there, and tobacco regulation is also in the mix there, but those are newer than some of the environmental ones, which have been happening for a longer time. So one example that we have seen under NAFTA is Eli Lilly. So the foreign investor was a U.S. company, a U.S. drug company, challenging a Canadian rule about patent rules and generic alternatives to Eli Lilly's drugs being available in Canada. So Eli Lilly is asking for $480 million in this case. It isn't over yet. But this is the kind of case we expect to see more of, and this became a real fight in the negotiation of the TPP. Australia and Vietnam in particular were very involved in this. We've seen press reporting about what's in this deal. Biologic drugs became the real talking point about the drug industry wanted 12 years of protection. Folks are reporting they're going to get 8. And so this is an area where we expect to see more of these deals. Tobacco is another area that's emerging in this. And so there's been a lot of different ways that tobacco companies have gone after public health protections designed to deal with tobacco use. Sometimes it's just straight old-fashioned lobbying. The New York Times did a long piece on this summer about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce going after different countries just through old-fashioned pressuring them not to do it. But then under trade deals, there are other mechanisms as well. This Philip Morris case, Philip Morris versus Australia, to be able to use a challenge under a bilateral deal, Philip Morris used a Hong Kong-based subsidiary to go after an Australian law because Hong Kong and Australia had a deal. So it provides a venue almost for a forum for really venue shopping and figuring out, when you have all of these bilateral deals that have this provision and there's subsidiaries all over the place, it gives them options. It gives companies options to go after a domestic standard somewhere they don't want. There's also a dispute against the anti-tobacco program in Uruguay, which is a graphic images on the label requirement, and it's similar being done under an investor state dispute mechanism. And to take that definition of public health protections pretty broadly, we include things that municipalities, states, regional governments might do over land use that have public health impacts. So the battle over fracking is driven in large part by public health concerns, people worried about impacts on water, neighboring communities, et cetera, where the waste is going to go. And so this is a challenge being brought under NAFTA by a gas company. It's challenging Quebec's decision to suspend oil and gas exploration permits in a certain region. This company already had permits, and they said, you know, you're impeding our ability to make money there. The fascinating part of this, in vain of that venue shopping, is that Lone Pine is a Canadian company, but they have a P.O. box in Delaware, and they said they have U.S. investors. That made them a U.S. company that could use NAFTA to challenge this law in Canada. And so this is what's at stake. We spend a lot of time at Food and Water Watch talking about fracking, trying to stop fracking because we think it cannot be done safely. You'll see clusters of these stars where local governments have said, we don't want this land use to happen. You'll see how many of them are in New York State, and New York State is not allowing this drilling. This is where citizens get heard on these kinds of issues. They get heard at the local level and the state level. It takes much, much longer to get the federal government to respond to these kinds of things. But in the mechanism we're concerned will be in the TPP or maybe even in the TTIP with Europe, is that the federal government has to defend this state or local law. That creates a chilling effect for local governments who are afraid the federal government isn't going to defend them, and it creates an incentive for preemption. Right, which is for the federal government to say, you don't get to do this anymore, local government or state government, because we're going to have to defend you under this trade deal. We already have problems with preemption and a lot of issues like land use. If, again, food labeling, because that's what I spend my day to day on, we're battling a bill right now in Congress where the federal government wants to stop states from requiring labeling of genetically engineered foods. Citizens are getting a response to their concerns at the state level. The federal government is being swayed by industry to take those rights away from state governments. This will make that trend and that drive towards preemption even worse if the federal government is afraid they're going to have to defend these state laws against foreign investor challenge. So lots of these cases, I've used, you know, North American examples, lots of these cases are happening in the developing world. Here's, you know, more than I'll go through, but these are happening. Again, you'll see a theme in these of oil industry, energy industry issues. Most of these are happening under bilaterals. The one of Cochabamba, Bolivia, is pretty infamous, where Bechtel got kicked out of the deal because Cochabamba wasn't happy with how they were running their water system. And really, that case only wrapped up after tremendous international controversy, not because the process protected the town of Cochabamba. So these are all fairly famous examples, and it does cut both ways. I didn't want to use just examples where U.S. laws are being challenged, although we worry about that because that's what we often work on. These are often used against developing countries who have some policy they have felt necessary to pass, and under a trade deal, a fairly large foreign entity comes in to say that they need to not have that law apply to them. Oops, sorry. And so the last piece that I will mention is the tobacco piece is getting a lot of attention in the TPP because evidently there is some carve-out that has happened. So we'll find out what that carve-out looks like exactly when the text finally comes out and is public. But to us, and to a lot of folks who've been watching these dispute settlements, it is a recognition that this dispute settlement can be used to attack public health standards. And so that was supposedly the motivation in the negotiations to say, we can have investor-state dispute, but you can't do some of it on tobacco because we have to deal with the public health impacts of tobacco. That may be salvaging or minimizing some of the bad impact in this TPP, but we do think we need to pay attention to the admission that is, that these are not necessarily dispute settlements that are only about investment. They are also about, they have also been used to attack things that might do a public good. So maybe if we have to have a TPP, which I don't think we have to have, that might be a tiny amount of progress, but we think it's important to note that even trade negotiators acknowledged that these dispute settlements can be used to do real harm. So we're going to see what that does to the politics of passing that deal, which has to happen at some point, probably in the early part of next year, potentially. But it's also important to point out that countries have to opt in to that carve-out. So developing countries or smaller economies in the TPP have to raise their hand and say, we want to exercise that option to have our tobacco control program be recognized, and there could be other pressure that comes upon them not to use that carve-out and not to protect their domestic law. So for all of the hoopla about the public health achievement of carving out tobacco, there are still ways for countries' rules to be vulnerable. So shockingly, we're not big fans of the TPP, and we're concerned about the European deal that's coming as well. There's a lot of different set of investors. A lot of food issues will be in play there. There's a lot of very large European food companies that may not like things that we are doing on the food front here, including labeling, local food procurement, lots of things like that. So we have a lot more information and a lot more opportunities for folks to see where things are at in the approval of this deal on our website. So thank you. So different, and other speakers may have more specific details. There's a, essentially the World Tribunal, the word tribunal gets used a lot. It's set, the deal will set up a forum. So the WTO, it happens at the WTO. In NAFTA, it sets out the terms for what the venue will be, and, you know, and it's not a courtroom. It's not going to be the procedures that we're familiar with as kind of citizens of the United States.
In terms for the Canadian case and the Australian case, it's just important to note that that these things went through the courts systems in both of those countries, and the Lilly lost in Canada, Philip Morris lost in Australia, and it was that, so you lose in the courts, and then you go into these tribunals, and there is no appeal from the tribunals.
Right. Yeah, the example that's near and dear, not to my heart, but to my something, is this country of origin label case. And I've spent my whole career trying to get country of origin labeling, and we are in danger of losing it. And, you know, the meat industry does not want to label meat. They don't want to say where it comes from. They've been very clear about that. They lost once in the Farm Bill when we said you have to label this meat. They tried again. They lost again. Congress said, yes, you have to label this meat. They went to the USDA and tried to weaken the standards. We got good standards. They went to the U.S. courts and said it abridged the freedom of speech, and the courts said, no, it doesn't. They tried everything. And then at the same time, they were in this side track of the WTO as a backup plan, right? So it gives them another venue, exactly. When in the domestic system they're operating in, they can't win that way. That's a good question. I can find out. Sometimes it's in which venue, so I don't want to incorrectly say it was under this mechanism. I know that there are always challenges to labor. People are very worried right now about local minimum wage laws. That's a worry. It's not yet happened. But I could check with our researcher that pulls a lot of this stuff and get back to you if you come grab me afterwards. Thanks.
Thanks very much.